Don, I have the perfect example that really brings that be hungry to learn point out. And it's literally the way that you and I met. Now, in order to tell this story, we've got to go way, way, way back to the 10th of October, 1998. And that's when my wife and I got married. And we didn't have a honeymoon right then. We decided to delay our honeymoon until later on. So fast forward now to towards the end of 1999, and my wife and I have said, you know what, we're going to go to Canada, and because she'd always wanted to go to Canada, and my sister-in-law was from White Rock in BC, and we wanted to go and visit this White Rock, which turns out to be just some tacky spray-painted rock. I can't tell you how disappointed I was. So we ended up deciding to go to Canada. Now, in order to make this work, what I thought I'd do is, hey, I'm interested in the whole wealth creation thing. I'm going to go to a seminar. And it was actually a seminar of all things on direct marketing, nothing to do with real estate at first glance at all. And it just so happened that one of the speakers at this event was this guy. His name was Don Campbell. He was talking about writing classified ads and increasing the response that you get from those ads. And there was just something that you said that really, in the back of my mind, had really hit home. Dave Bradley, my business partner, and I had just bought a property prior to leaving to go to Canada, and we were just going to rent it out on a buy and hold strategy. And something that you said about, you know, writing classified ads, and then I met up with another investor at the seminar, a participant who was telling me about the way that he was investing, which was he was buying properties, and then instead of selling them straight away, he was selling them to people buying them, and he was effectively financing it. So I came back to Australia, and I ran this little classified ad following your tips. And eventually I ended up making about four or five times the amount of money I would have made if I just had had it as a buy and hold. The other thing I did as a result of that seminar was put my name down on your marketing list to get your emails. And so for the next few months when I came back to Australia, you kept sending me out once a month emails saying, hey, here's a great tip about marketing and all the rest of it. And I was actually employing the things that you were saying. And then you sent me an email saying, hey, I'm going to be speaking at this seminar. It'd be great if you came along. So I decided, hey, this would be fantastic. And because we were flying from Australia all the way out to North America, what we found was that, hey, we had something in common. I showed you that I was more than just a tire kicker through my actions. And no doubt you went, well, here's a guy who's come all this way. I'm going to allocate some time. And no doubt you remember that we went out for dinner and had a chat a bit afterwards. And we started to develop a bit of a relationship together. So what I'm saying is a couple of points. One is, if you want to flag yourself as someone who's serious, then all the talk in the world doesn't count. It's your actions that will determine whether someone's going to partner with you. And I actually today set the hurdle really high. Lots of people ask me for help, but I only help a tiny fraction of people, only because I know that lots of people ask for it, but not everyone's going to do something with it. So you not only have to be hungry to learn, you also have to demonstrate that in your actual action about what you do. The second thing is, you have to reinvest a portion of your profits or a portion of your salary in acquiring education. And this is an ongoing process. So you have to pay to get ideas that you don't have that other people do have. So how are you going to leverage off other people's good ideas if you don't have ideas in the first place? That's a fantastic way to lead into the seventh attribute, which is don't procrastinate. There's always going to be a reason for doing nothing. It comes back to this whole idea of comfort zones. But what do you need to do to turn your vision or your intention into a reality or an outcome? In my investing, what I do is I split every task that I need to do into three sections. It either has to be done, which means I haven't started yet, I'm either in progress of doing it, or alternatively, it's done. Now, in investing, you want to have a mix of all the things you've got to do, all the things you are doing, and all the things that you have done. Because if you've only got a list of things to do, then you're a dreamer. If you're doing things but never finishing things, then what you are is a procrastinator. And if you finish things but never start anything new again, you're living in the glory of yesterday. So it doesn't matter what you've done or what you're planning to do, you need to have a mix of things you've got to do, things you are doing, and things that you've completed as you push your ideas through the vision stage, the doing stage, and the done stage, so thereby that you're always making continual progress. Number eight, Don, is you need to accept responsibility for the fact that you are going to need to make your dream turn into a reality. So no one is going to do it for you. Now, you can pay people to help you, your accountant and your solicitor or legal advisor. You can pay your realtor or your rental manager and your financier and your insurance agent and all these people peripheral to the deal. But you're the one who's actually going to need to drive it all along. Now, the analogy that I use is you need to be the driver, not the horse. Now, you don't need to do all the work yourself. Before, we talked about the importance of delegating. the one thing you do need to do is make sure that you're the one holding on to the reins and steering the wagon as it rolls along the road. If you drive a car and you're always looking in the rear vision mirror, it's only a matter of time until you have a crash. But similarly, if you're driving a car and you only look forwards and never look back, then the problem is you don't know what people around you are doing or behind you doing, understanding that the guy might actually run up your backside, cause you to have an accident. But you need to be accepting responsibility as the driver of the car and always maintaining control over what you're doing. But Don, surely you've seen situations of people that aren't responsible and the financially disastrous consequences as a result.
Well, absolutely. You know what I always talk about, and that is you have to 100% accept responsibility for the bad things that happen in your life, and only then can you take 100% responsibility for the good things that happen. If you're the kind of person who only accepts the responsibility for the good stuff and is pointing fingers or making excuses as why the bad stuff always happens to you, that means that you're not taking responsibility, and it'll be almost impossible to move forward from where you are until you say, okay, this is my life, and this is what I'm going to do. I'm going to steer this ship the way that I want it to go and the way that it should go. And as soon as you grab the reins, no pun intended, that's when life really starts to take off for you, both in real estate and in your personal life and in your business. It's always the same. Successful people take responsibility for both good and bad.
So let's look at an example that brings out point number 8 about accepting responsibility and also point number 9, which is taking continual action. An example I want to use is, let's say that you have a property that you want to sell and that you want to put it on the market, and a realtor, we call them real estate agents over here, says, you know what, I've got 10 buyers lined up who are looking for your exact property. If you list with us, not only will I be able to get you top dollar, I'll bring you a quick sale and it'll be on favorable terms and music to your ears and everything else happens. So you sign the listing agreement. And the next thing you know is that it's 3 weeks later, not one person has been through your property. You're ringing the realtor. The realtor's saying to you, you know what, things have changed. The buyers who I thought were interested, they've all bought elsewhere. And basically you're left with this, you've been sold a lie effectively, and you're wondering what to do. Well, the first thing you need to do is accept responsibility. You're the one that chose that agent. And by accepting responsibility, it creates a learning outcome that you can understand that you were sold on emotion rather than fact. So that's the lesson that you can learn and then apply for next time. That it's not the realtor with the biggest promise that is necessarily the best sales agent or even buyer's agent. It's the one who will listen to you and give you what you want rather than what they think that you want. So they think that you want a top price, but if you want a quick sale and they've never asked you, then you might be talking a different language. So you need to accept responsibility for assigning or for hiring the wrong advisor in the first place. And then rather than just accept that you've hired the wrong person, you also need to take action. Now, for instance, if they made the promise that they had 10 people on their list, I would say that one of the conditions of the listing agreement is that they need to bring me an offer within 14 days. Based on one of these 10 people actually buying it. If they haven't done it within 14 days, the listing agreement lapses. So rather than just allow the agent to keep spinning me a story about why the property hasn't sold, about the people that are looking through it, but it's just not quite right, the paint's the wrong color, the carpet's the wrong color, whatever, insert reason here about why they didn't buy, you need to accept responsibility and take continual action to potentially fire that agent or to do something that would then entice sellers to buy. All too often, I've seen buyers put their property on the market and then wait for the agent to bring them a buyer. So they stop taking continual action. They take action once and then not again. Or they go to a finance broker or a mortgage broker and the broker says, no worries, I'm going to get you finance. And rather than ringing up and continually hounding and follow through, at the last minute when they get told that no lender can be found to lend them money and that they're in a difficult situation, all of a sudden the victim mentality kicks in about, why didn't you tell me earlier? Rather than accepting that responsibility as well. The little mantra that I use is just something that I've borrowed out of science, that every action has a reaction. And if you do action, reaction over and over again, before long, you'll have momentum behind you. And it's those people that take action once and no reaction, or only do the action, reaction a couple of times, but never reach momentum, that always struggle for direction. And then that's point number 10, is that it's important not to be a Han Solo. Now, of course, I've borrowed Han Solo from Star Wars movies. I don't know if you remember, but Han Solo was the guy who was trying to do everything himself. You know what? I don't need you. I'm fine by myself. Thanks very much. I'm going to be in Australia. We call them the chief cook and bottle washers because they want to do everything. They're control freaks. They're not happy to delegate. They're not happy to assign. And in the end, what happens is they end up being busy rather than productive. So because they've got so many things on, they end up trying to do everything poorly rather than one or two things really well. So number 10, don't be a Han Solo, basically comes down to your ability to delegate to people who are better equipped and more skilled at doing the tasks than you are and paying them out of your profits. I certainly want control of my time. The last thing I want to be doing is ringing up 250 tenants every week to ask them whether they've paid the rent. There's no way I could do that personally. I couldn't make 250 phone calls a week to tenants and do that. But if I can pay a rental manager to do it and they've got their team behind them to make sure the rent continually comes in, then I get time leverage. That is, you get no time leverage being a Han Solo. And remember, the whole thing about investing in the first place is to get your time back so you can do the things you want to do and love doing rather than the things that you have to do.
Steve, I see we're just about out of time. Can you give us that last one, the 11th attribute? What is it that the number 11 that's so important?
When I started off in investing and I was telling everyone what my plans were about going to Ballarat, which is a town northwest of Melbourne, 70,000 people living there, everyone, absolutely everyone said that I was crazy. They'd get no capital growth in the country. The area was contracting. You need to invest in town. All these reasons about why it wouldn't work. But the problem was, and I listened to some of these people and really took it on board, these people had something that I didn't want, and that was a job. So what I said right then and there, I made myself a rule that I'm going to do things differently, and that's what's going to generate my success. Now, you look at my book, for instance, sold 125,000 copies. How come that book sold 125,000 copies when the real estate bookshelves in Australia in a bookstore are full of titles? How come this one did really well? And the answer is my philosophy about real estate investing, as you might have picked up on this recording, is different. I don't get into this whole negative gearing situation about buying for growth and getting a tax discount now. I don't believe that you should shaft the landlord. Like, I have an abundance mentality to my real estate investing. I believe you should invest in real estate for income and the stock market for growth, for instance, rather than the other way around, which is the way that most people look at it. So whatever you do in life, if you want what everyone else has, do what everyone else does. But if you want something different, then don't expect everyone else to change to your paradigm. You have to go and grab a new paradigm and be happy about being different, understanding that you are going to be ridiculed and criticized and told that you're crazy and told that things don't work. But all that is a manifestation of people who are stuck with that I can't attitude rather than you who are trying to embrace a new way of thinking, which is an I can attitude. Now, if you really want the investing outcome that you desire, and that can translate into taking action, then I have no doubt, and I mean absolutely no doubt, that over time you'll achieve your goal, provided you don't let the dream stealers in. The people who say, no, you don't deserve that, or you're not smart enough, or you're not rich enough, or any other reason like that, people that drag you back into the pot. That if you can avoid these people and say, no, I choose not to listen to you because I know that my success comes from things differently, then it's not a matter of if you'll achieve success, it's a matter of when.
Oh, absolutely. And there's a quote that I use constantly, that most successful people didn't achieve their distinction through luck or unique advantage. They focused and developed the opportunity that was right in front of them. And you know what? The opportunity right now is right in front of the listeners. And you don't have to be the sharpest tool in the shed. You don't have to be the best looking. You don't have to be lucky. What you need to do is just follow those 11 attributes. Now, Steve, we're running really quickly out of time here, but if there's one thing you could tell the real estate investor as they're progressing through the ups and downs of the real estate market and the changes that they're going to go through, what would it be?
One of my favorite movies, Don, is a movie called Galaxy Quest, and it's come out some years ago now. Some of the listeners may have seen it. It's a comedy, but the mantra of that comedy, never give up, never surrender, is something that I apply to my own life. You have to expect that there are going to be difficulties, because if it was easy, more people would do it and more people would be better at it than is the case at the moment. So in a nutshell, what I'd say to people is that never give up, never surrender. Just take it one step at a time. I know that's a cliche, but the problems that you're facing today are really challenges that are testing your resolve about how badly do you want to achieve the outcome that you desire. Every problem that you're facing, every hardship is an opportunity for you to learn and an opportunity for you to grow. And I would encourage you to embrace these opportunities rather than trying to shy away from them. Again, I have faith that you can do it if you have faith in yourself that you want it badly enough. That's the question I want to leave you with. Do you think that you can really do it? Is your investing outcome a must or a maybe? Give it a go and don't give up.
Steve, it has been absolutely tremendous to have you on this conference call. I thoroughly enjoyed the conversation and the insights that you gave. So once again, all of you listeners, most successful people don't achieve their distinction through luck or unique advantage. They focus on and develop the opportunity that's right in front of them. You have the opportunity and right in front of you now. Just check, are you committed to doing what it takes to become successful? Thank you so very much for listening. And Steve, thank you very much for being on.
I trust that you've now really enjoyed that interview and that there were plenty of insights about the 11 attributes of successful investors. It's now time to take action, remembering that action leads to reaction, which eventually leads to momentum. So don't just sit on this CD and do nothing, or put it to the memory bank of your life and take no action. I want to really challenge you to work out at least 6 things you can do as a result of listening to this recording to improve your life as an investor. Once again, I believe you can do it if you believe you can do it. But I'm not the one who's going to do it for you. It's up to you to make it happen. Accept responsibility and take continual action. I'm Steve McKnight. Bye-bye for now.